Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Time now for the WEEI Producers Show on WEEI. WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
That's right. It is the WEI Producer Show. Tyler Devitt alongside John Anderson, Ryan Garvin, the Producer Show produced, as always, by Nick LaPan. John and Ryan, big question for you guys.
Good morning,
big
everybody.
Answer for you.
Big answer required here at 8 o'clock on WEI. Is Milk for Perverts because it took over the station, and I didn't really understand the logic behind the Milk is for Perverts take. I understand not liking milk, but milk being for perverts caught me off guard by one Megan Adelini this week.
Yeah, it was a very, very strong way to start our Thursday
show. Maybe that's
show.
A question you should ask China.
Oh, we will ask them. We'll call them the Harbor One
Hotline. My new favorite drop this
week. I enjoy milk. I don't go out of my way to drink it as a 32-year-old adult, but if milk is presented to me, then I'm not going to turn my nose up at it. I don't think that it's a thing exclusively for perverts. The thing that she said about that got me was, I think Lou asked if she puts it in her cereal, and she said she eats her cereal dry, which is way more.
Yeah, so that's more psychotic than not drinking milk.
If you eat your cereal dry, especially out of the spite for milk, that's crazy behavior.
And this was hours before she drank, I think, 1.5 vanilla milkshakes to down the one chip challenge.
Suddenly, when milk comes knocking at your doorstep, suddenly a big milk guy, huh, Mego?
Yeah, you think you're too highfalutin to drink milk because you think it's for perverts? I have no idea. That was a bizarre take.
I'm not going to have a glass of milk. I don't do that anymore. But one thing, as somebody with myriad stomach problems, some almond milk and a bowl of Raisin Bran is like the best thing that's ever happened to me. So, but that's basically it. No more milk and coffee. I go plain yogurt.
Is that like a delicious snack?
We need some milk.
What is that from? You guys have hammered that drop. I've heard the drop.
It's a really old. I think this kid gets like punched out or something, and this woman says that
he needs some milk.
Kid got punched out, and her solution was milk.
Yeah, I think it's a World Star video.
Did it work? Of course it's a World Star video.
I can't imagine that worked. You just pour it over him and cross your fingers and wait for the paramedics to show up.
That's what they did to Jesus.
Could you milk me?
The milk is for perverts take pissed off a lot of people on the station.
Mills about it.
I heard.
Was he pro-milk or anti-milk?
He was a cereal guy. That was where his mind went to first. He's like, sure. He was like, I put milk in cereal. He's like, I'm not really sitting down and having a glass of milk with the boys. The one instance, obviously, though, in milk, like, you know, various milk beverages that are in style around holiday season. But also, I'm a hoe for a White Russian.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
White Russians are incredible.
I went on a cruise once, and you buy like the all-you-could-drink like drink package, and you get 15 drinks per day. And it was a
15?
You get 15 drink tickets, and they match you out.
That's like when Michael Scott goes to the liquor store, and he's like, is this going to be enough to get 15 people wasted, 19 bottles of vodka? Yeah, that should do it.
That would do it.
So you max out at 15 drinks per day, 15 drink tickets, and it's like, well, drinks. And so I always went up and ordered a White Russian because I was freshly 21. I was like, I don't really want this. Like, this is the best tasting booze drink. It tastes like chocolate milk.
Yeah.
I think I weighed like 9 pounds heavier after the trip. I mean, that thing will put some weight on you. All that cream
stuff. Yeah, you definitely can't have like 5 White Russians either, though. You can have like 2 or 3 and get away with it. Yeah. But it's,
you know what I want with my liquor? Dairy.
Yeah.
That's a delicious combination.
Put some Kahlua in there, Bailey's.
Now you got me thinking about dry cereal.
The guy is drunk.
And the dry cereal people, I think, are way more concerning than the anti-Mego crowd. Because, yeah, Gresham Keefe did ask Jalen Mills about it. He's like, yeah, you know, I like a bowl of cereal. I like, what do you say, Fruity Pebbles?
Hell yeah.
I think he said, he didn't say Cocoa Puffs. He said the, what's the other, what's Pebbles? The chocolate one? I think he might have said
that
Cocoa.
That was Gresh's thing.
He might have said Cocoa Pebbles, and then Gresh was like, yeah.
Just get some chocolate milk. I mean, what are you doing?
Well, Gresh just likes that. He likes that there's chocolate milk at the end of it when you
chocolate milk at the beginning, like, if you have chocolate milk.
Yeah, I was
with
like, just get chocolate milk then.
I will be on Gresh's side here. The chocolate milk in the aftermath of Cocoa Pebbles is so much different than actual chocolate milk.
It is very good. And even
milk.
You know, your Cocoa Puffs, like, for example, the first, you know, that night that, you know, S really hit the fan with COVID, and, like, you know, Mark, that shot of Mark Cuban standing up in the crowd looking at his phone, and then all of a sudden, Tom Hanks. My roommate and I had just gone to the grocery store right before that, because I think that was when Glenn had claimed he had a source at the State House saying everything was going to close. So I was like, all right, let's just go to the store and just get some supplies.
It's going to be anarchy.
That's an all-time Glenn source was I have Ordway saying that he had a source at the State House. It's like, okay, I want a name.
Don't
I'm
you
be
doubt him.
But we went, I just bought a crap load of Cocoa Puffs, and I completely used like COVID as an excuse to just eat a box of Cocoa Puffs for every meal in one day.
Everything I've read in the Sacramento Bee, and that's where I'm getting most of this information.
See, subscribe.
The State House of the Sacramento Bee. Listen, that's a good excuse to house four boxes of Cocoa Puffs, but I just think of the dry cereal crowd. Like,
cereals like Fruity Pebbles, yeah. Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
No, actually, I got turned off with Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I grew out of it.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, like that, overrated. That'll like, you know, sometimes the pointy part of it, Golden Graham as well, will like get stuck in the roof of your mouth. You ever had that happen
oh,
before?
Oh, no, you're running. Captain Crunch is another one. You're really playing with fire, I think.
And that's
the
Cocoa
mouth.
Puffs issue as well. Yeah, you're going to carve up the roof of your mouth.
With milk. Like,
yeah,
you're going to
look like Jigsaw's face by the end of it.
But that's my question is, are you walking around with like a bag of Cheerios? Like, those are the people, as if you're an adult,
yeah, those people in high school that would bring in like a bag of Cheerios and just be like eating it with their hand. Their hands are like nasty. Then they're
so
touching pencil.
So much more unsettling than anybody that ever looked at a cow and said, I bet there's some liquid in there that I could get and pasteurize and make into a delicious drink. Those people with the...
How do you think that happened originally?
You Cheerio people with your bags, you scare the hell out of me.
Was someone carrying a sword and like tripped and accidentally cut open a cow and a bunch of milk came out? They were like, wait a minute.
According to Megan, they looked at the cow and said, well, I'm just going to suck that udder. Don't save that. And that's how milk was formed,
That was
I guess.
Clean, I think.
All right, welcome to the WEI Producer Show. We're here until 9 o'clock, I think, and the Ken and Carter Show follows us either in studio or at Fenway Park. We'll find out.
I love Teat.
Come up here at 8:55. I think one of the most important sound bites of the week is a two-parter from Tommy Curran.
Was what Ryan just said?
Yes, of course, that one.
I love utter.
The utter's take, which I will not be repeating. There's two parts from Tommy Curran that I thought was really interesting, which you can find them all throughout the week on Gresham Keefe. Used to be on Mutt at Night. We stole them from Mutt, of course.
Sorry, Mutt.
We stole them from Mutt, so we now have Curran, at 4:30 on Thursdays?
Yep.
4:30 on Thursdays. Tuesdays, right, with Gresham Keefe.
High noon, yep.
High noon. So Kern had a lot of really good stuff this week, source stuff. And this was an opinion that I thought that he threw out that I actually agreed with, and I might even take it a step further. This was Kern on Merlone Fourier Mego. He was asked about Robert Kraft's confidence, which if I were to ask you guys what your confidence on a 1 to 10 scale, we'll hear what Kern's opinion is, but what is your opinion on a 1 to 10 scale in Robert Kraft's confidence in the level of Bill Belichick's ability to run the organization? I would say like a 5. What would you guys put it at?
I think a little higher than that. Maybe I'd put it like a 7, but I don't even really think that part matters because I agree with the second half of Curran's answer, which was 6.4 and waning. I think the and waning is a major part of that as well. But I don't think it's going to actually ever cause Robert to do anything about it.
But no one would disagree. It's falling, right? Everyone says it's falling. Like, you had a bad off season.
It's like a waning crescent moon.
No playoff wins recently.
I think when the season started, I think when you go back to March and you listen to Robert Kraft talk about, you know, he's not necessarily straight line, but we've had a lot of success here. I think it started as a 10. I think it's been a 10 for a long time, and I don't think it's just until the last, you know,
wouldn't
month
a 10
and
be
a half.
Wouldn't that 10 be like a post-2018 Super Bowl win? Like that 19 season with Brady the final year? That would be where you're at a 10.
You lose with
Brady, you let him walk, you have no playoff wins. And like, how do you have it? Wouldn't it be like a 9 or an 8?
Making the playoffs with Mac Jones, though, in his rookie year is a pretty... That shouldn't just be forgotten either.
So the rebuild is complete.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying
it's a step in the right direction.
Your question is Robert Kraft's faith on a scale of 1 to 10 in Bill Belichick to run this organization, I think, has staunchly been a strong 10. And I think that Bill Belichick could go to Robert Kraft in after 2020, after Cam Newton, and make the argument and say, listen, this is the plan for this team the next 3 or 4 years, and this is what we have to do. And yes, unfortunately, it does involve you opening up the checkbook and paying for some positions because we have not drafted well. I think Robert Kraft, when Robert Kraft is saying, you know, you went through the draft and we haven't been able to do that recently, I think he's comfortable saying that because I'm sure that's a conversation that him and Bill Belichick have had behind closed doors. But let's hear what Tom Curran has to say before we really unpack this.
I think it's 6.4 and falling. I mean, he's not going to stand there in front of the media and make comments last year about the draft and that it had to be better and that he liked to see the collaborative process. And that happening, and then the two guys who were very involved in it, Elliot Wolf and Dave Ziegler, are elsewhere. Wolf might still be here. Matt Groh. But he's not going to stand there and lament the production that they didn't get from players in 2021, say that we're going to get more production from them this year, and then have guys who aren't even sure which end of the crayon to hold when they're drawing up plays in charge of things.
That is mean.
I forgot about it.
That was such a good line.
It's not like Patricia can color between the lines anyways.
He needs some milk.
See, that's a he needs some milk.
And
moment.
Yes, it is. I think when you listen to Tom, I think he is right on the nose. So when I say it probably had been a 10 all along, but then when Robert Kraft starts to look around and starts asking questions that might be a little more difficult to answer going into the season as opposed to answering those questions going into last season.
I think it's 6.4.
And I think.
And falling.
It's tough. If you're Bill Belichick, to answer the question, like, okay, Josh McDaniels did really, really well here. He was doing really well with Mac Jones, and now he's out the door. What's your plan after that? Is it Joe Judge? Is Joe Judge the long-term answer?
There isn't a plan.
Why is Matt Patricia doing 5,000 different things for this front office? Why does nobody have a title? Why haven't we been able to draft? I think the questions that might have been easily explained by the coaching side of Bill Belichick are becoming more difficult to answer. And unfortunately, as Bill said going into the year, that's Bill's fault. John.
Another report that came out this week was from Albert Breer. And it was that Bill Belichick apparently did not pursue Bill O'Brien. And the question for you guys is there some arrogance to this? Is some arrogance that they were just going to immediately be fine and everyone was going to want Bill O'Brien? The report was that Belichick did not pursue Bill O'Brien because he thought Bill O'Brien would only last a season and then get another head coaching job.
Oh, that's the truth.
You think so?
As far as Bill O'Brien getting a job after a year, I believe that.
I believe that's 100% the case. So that there's no reason.
Do you think the offense would have been so good in its first year and the Patriots would have been so successful that teams would have been fawning after Bill O'Brien?
Keep
in mind, in a year where this is shaping up to maybe be a year where there aren't a ton of head coach openings next year. It feels like there's only going to be maybe two or three.
Well, I would say look at it from Matt Patricia. Don't even look at it from Matt Patricia's perspective. That's really hard. Look at it from Bill O'Brien's current perspective. He's playing with Bryce Young, probably the most offensively talented group in the nation, the group he's coaching in the Alabama Crimson Tide offense. They're going to go undefeated, and they're going to play in the national championship game, or at least in the Final Four, in that Final Four spot. And so it's kind of like a foolproof. It's a win-win situation. Like, there's no way that he's not going to be one of the hottest coaching candidates in this upcoming offseason.
That wouldn't happen, though, because he would be the Patriots OC this year.
Right, so why would you take the Patriots OC position when you know
you're saying he wouldn't have been interested in it.
I think that he wasn't interested. It wasn't Belichick's choice. I think Belichick saw that there's no reason that Bill O'Brien would ever take it, so why would I waste my time pursuing it? He brought him in. To what? He was at some of the summer camp workouts. He was at summer practices.
In Foxborough. Yeah, I think he was.
He was hanging around the facility. But for what reason? My theory is that Bill Belichick or the Krafts told him, hey, Bill's not walking away anytime soon, or we can't guarantee that he's going to be Bill Belichick's successor. So why would Bill O'Brien take the Patriots OC position if he's not guaranteed long-term security as the next guy after Bill? He's not coming here to be the OC.
If they didn't do that for Josh, they're not doing it for Bill O'Brien.
Exactly. So why would he come here to be the OC? He'd only come here to be the next man in line. He could be the OC and then take over after Bill leaves, but that's not happening anytime soon. He didn't receive that assurance.
I hope Jonathan just sends all the Belichick confidants on a Viking funeral after. after Belichick. Yeah. I don't want it to be anyone that has anything to do with the previous era.
Yeah, so therefore that's why I believe that Bill O'Brien's in Tuscaloosa coaching college football offenses, because it's a win-win for him rather than be here in a lose-lose situation.
He doesn't have to like recruit or anything like that.
Imagine the narrative right now if Bill O'Brien's coaching this offense, Ryan.
Well, that's the thing. You're running under the assumption that if Bill O'Brien is here, that he would even have the title of offensive coordinator in the first place.
Oh, Bill O'Brien would.
I don't think that is such an obvious thing. If nobody on this staff has any titles whatsoever.
Yeah, but it's Bill O'Brien.
I think he's
fairly above all of them.
I disagree. I could not see him or anybody getting any sort of title here, which is, you say arrogance. You know, was it arrogance on the part of the Patriots for not doing that in the first place, for not bringing in an outside source, even though Bill O'Brien was here? I feel like I would be gaslighting people if I'm like, yes, 100% it was done out of arrogance. I think Bill Belichick looked at what he had and what he needed.
Arrogance as in Bill passed because he thought it would be fine?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
I just can't subscribe to that. Like, as much as I can't understand what the plan was going into this season, I'm assuming there was one, and this isn't me trying to explain away and go, no, it's a good plan. I still don't know what the deal is. Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to find out what the deal is. Like, as we get through this hour of the show, like the Matt Patricia thing is specifically really, really scratching my mind, and I start to think big picture of what this team might look like a couple years down the road if Bill Belichick is still at the helm or not, and what he has set this team up to be, and how many of the Bill Belichick confidants that, I'm sorry, what'd you say, a Viking funeral?
Yeah.
Are actually still going to
set
be
all
here.
Of them on fire with arrows. That's what I want to happen.
Oh, is that what we do?
Them.
We put them in a longboat and we...
Except they're still alive. Are they giving that treatment to the Queen this week?
No, they're saying you can't lock your bikes up on a bike rack in the UK because of the death. Do you see that?
Really?
The Queen passed away, and they're like, no.
Is it bizarre? What
because
if,
of a time of mourning, please do not lock up your bikes on the bike rack.
Sporting events.
What if over here we had just this rack of black suits and dresses for Courtney and Meggo, that if somebody in this country died, we had to go over and change into those and then get on Twitch where, like, all of the British presenters had to do. That's bizarre. Oh. They just have suits, like, that fit all of them just waiting there at the place and at their studios in case the Queen dies. And then the second that they do whatever the call was, the London Bridge has fallen, I think is, like, the code word that goes up. That's, like, the Queen's about to die. They all have to go over and switch into those and get on.
I'm not doing that.
And they all have to like, praise her and not bring up colonialism.
For the Twitch audience, no chance.
I know we're up
Sorry,
against
guys.
The break. You watched UFC 279.
Did
you see last weekend when they put up, like, the RIP, like, in memory of the Queen?
Yeah.
And the crowd, where was that? UFC 279. You remember where
it was
at?
In Las Vegas.
It was in Las Vegas. So a very, I don't want to say a MAGA state, but a little red state, and they started chanting USA, and they booed the Queen of the Dead.
I couldn't understand a lot of the platitudes that were going on. Like, I heard The Rock made like a 2.5 minute video, and I'm like, man, you used to be cool, and now you're sending your mana over to the royal family. Like, I'm not upset that she's dead, but I'm not going to sit there when they show a picture of Queen Elizabeth II. I think, you know, we would ask for your
memory.
Boo, you suck.
We won.
USA! Ooh, 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 ooh. No, that's insane behavior. And yes, I did see that. Those are my fight people. Thanks,
this hour of the Producer Show is brought to you by the cleanup and restoration specialist at ServPro. Call 1-800-SERVPRO. John Anderson has the best trending you've ever heard in your life. It is up next on WEI.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof?
Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
WEEI. We are right back to the WEEI Producers Show.
Streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
Back here on the WEEI Producers Show, brought to you by the Cleanup and Restoration Specialist at ServPro. Call 1-800-SERVPRO. John Anderson, Ryan Garvin, Tyler Devitt back on WEEI. Ken and Curtis follow us coming up at 9 o'clock. Some quick text here. This show sucks. John Anderson's trash.
Oh, I mean, like, spell my name right?
No, they didn't.
Oh, they didn't.
If you're gonna rip John Anderson, please spell his name right. You can call him whatever you want, but just spell his last name correct.
It's
two E's.
Oh, it's
two E's.
Okay.
E at the end.
Yeah.
E at the beginning. Back here on the WEEI.
Two S's, one Y, but it's not where you think.
Back in the Bruce. One more text here. Problem with the Patriots.
See, now I agree with the texter.
Problem with the Patriots. They need everything to go right to win. They are not good enough to overcome a missed call like that pass interference last week on the first drive. Isn't that obvious?
The Dolphins game. Yeah.
Nothing's changed with the Patriots, who were never built to come from behind last year. Clearly still not built to come from behind. I don't know if they ever will be with Mac Jones, because he's not that, you know, he's not a Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert type of guy, which Justin Herbert never completes comebacks. He just kind of keeps him close
and breaks
within
ribs.
A field goal and breaks ribs, and everyone says how gutty he is, but he's actually overrated. We'll get to that another day.
Okay. So there's a take.
Justin Herbert's overrated.
No, Justin Herbert's not
so
overrated.
So going back to this upcoming week, what did you guys think of the week one where Kendrick Bourne played three snaps?
It was two snaps.
Immediate impact.
One on special teams.
Immediate impact, so maybe three total snaps. Bizarre, right? What was your instant reaction to it? Did you think it was disciplinary, practice-related? Troy Brown said he didn't have the offseason he had last year. What did you talk it up to initially?
I mean, immediately you tie it in with what happened before with the fight. In practice leading up to the Carolina game, I believe it was.
Yep.
So you figure that there must be some disciplinary issue tied in with that. And then obviously, you know, around here, every time there's a benching, we tie it back to Malcolm Butler. And we just prepare ourselves for them to say, like, oh, he wasn't in the game plan, which is basically what they did. And then Mike Giardi had the source who said that Kendrick Bourne was aware this week that he was not, he was basically not a part of the game plan. But then obviously we get to Tuesday at 12 and Tommy Curran came on with us. Nick, do you got this ready? Yeah, let's fire this off. What Curran said to us on Tuesday about Kendrick Bourne getting two snaps.
I think it's a Patricia thing. I think Kendrick Bourne showed great production last year and enthusiasm, and Josh McDaniels got a lot out of him. Just by seeing what transpired in the offseason and speaking to some folks, you know, around the situation, I think that from what Albert Breer reported about Kendrick Bourne not being fully on board with the way the install was going here, looking at his role and seeing it diminish, with two tight ends on the field. There was a meeting prior to the Carolina Panthers game that he was just a smidge late to that I think, you know, I was told that resulted in the benching that night. All of those things, I think, combined have landed him in Matt Patricia's doghouse. But are we talking about somebody who's gotten sideways with a particular coach and Belichick wants to give Matt the latitude to make his own decisions on how he proceeds? Or are we talking about a guy who's an active pain in the ass? I don't know, but we're looking at a guy whose production and the fact that he was in mothballs on Sunday certainly caught the eye of the owner, from what I understand. Oh. And I'd be surprised if he stays down for much longer.
The fact that Matt Patricia has either had the quote-unquote latitude to have a doghouse or the perception that he does have a doghouse, which maybe Bill Belichick found out like in the third or fourth quarter, wait, why isn't one of my best playmakers not playing? That seems BS to me, that Matt Patricia, of all people, has a doghouse and is willing to sit one of his better playmakers to prove a point. Have some balls if you're going to bench the guy and sit him out for the entire game.
Yeah, and this leads me to what level of authority that Matt Patricia has. If we listen to what Tom Curran is saying is on the money, and I don't doubt that, I mean, he's
no reason to doubt it. Yeah.
No, I have no reason to doubt him. I don't understand how I would ever be a Patriots fan and hear the phrase player X is in Matt Patricia's doghouse. Is Matt Patricia the head coach? No. then why does he have the authority to make a decision like that? Not only to bench, you know, what you would think is one of your better skill position players, but as the texter said, this team needs to basically play flawless in order to be in these games, especially if you're going to have points taken off the board. Well, you know what would really help execute the perfection? Having Kendrick Bourne on the field. If we want to see what Mac Jones is capable of, and the Let Mac Cook crowd is getting louder and louder as we go through the fall, why are you making it more difficult on him? Because Kendrick Bourne goes, excuse me, I actually was in the system that you guys were trying to install. I was in it 2 years ago, and I got some questions. I might actually have a couple of suggestions. And Matt Patricia's going, sit down, stupid. We're playing two tight ends, and your role is getting smaller. Your role is getting diminished. And Kendrick Bourne, I got to give him credit, is really good soldiering this whole thing, and I don't know if I would have
He's saying
capacity.
The right things, but you can see right through it. You can see exactly what he wants to say difference. Just by looking at him.
No, I get what you're saying, yeah. John, but there's a difference between how Kendrick Bourne is going about the issues he's having with him as opposed to, oh, I don't know, let's say Isaiah Wynn. Let's say Trent Brown, who skipped out on his initial media availability and then just, yep, nope, I love the Patriots. Next question.
They made a play.
Isaiah Wynn, I'm here. Do you want me to repeat my answer? I'm just where they need me to be. And it's so transparent and obvious that those two guys are becoming more and more disgruntled, whereas you look at a guy in Kendrick Bourne and go, I don't understand why you're not playing. So to go back to the term Matt Patricia's doghouse makes my skin crawl. I don't know. And I thought that was such an awesome moment that you guys had this week. I thought that was such a big,
you did a great job with it, by the way.
Big indicator.
Oh, current,
I think
yeah.
you did
yes.
an awesome job with it. And I
social hitting him multiple times in the air.
It was great, especially when we got to 8 p.m. on NBC Sports Boston, and that's when Curran said it them, and then on NBC Sports Boston, and then they put out the video of him saying the same thing. But we had already cleared 67,000 views on our video. So
I wonder if
Curran was spoken to over there. Like, hey Tom, maybe save this for here.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because then Tom Curran comes on with us on Maloney for you and Mega 4:30 on every Thursday. You can always subscribe to the Odyssey podcast.
Tom Curran earned his check this week.
Oh, he had a great week. But one of the first things we asked him was to clarify that point. And if you listen to what he says in that cut with you guys on Tuesday, it makes it sound like Robert Kraft is like, what the hell are we doing? And as he explained it on Thursday, it wasn't really so much an edict, just more of like a curiosity.
Yeah, no, he said that to us too, yeah.
But I wonder, what is the conversation? Is Robert Kraft going to Bill Belichick and going, why isn't Kendrick Bourne out there?
Oh,
and Bill Belichick turns around and goes, well, Matt Patricia's bad at
him. He missed a meeting a month ago.
Okey-doke, and goes back to his booth. How does that happen? How does, I'm sorry, Robert Kraft, and I don't know how much you want your owner to be meddling in the affairs of the football
Zero.
Team. And
Never.
Robert Kraft does not, historically has not done that. He has more of a, you know, kind of like a fatherly relationship with these players. Mm-hmm. You know, he's all hugs and kisses, and you were really great out there today. And it's sweet and nice and whatever. But I can't see him as the guy, you know, having somebody kick in Belichick's door and say, we got to have a talk. No. But what is the conversation like? Okay. So he's not out there because Matt Patricia's unhappy with him? So
oh, no.
You're giving all that authority into Matt Patricia to make these wholesale decisions about what the offense is going to be, and you only score 7 points? That has to stop.
Well, so whether he's meddling or not, which I think we all agree that he doesn't meddle.
No.
We do agree that, like, he has filled in on decisions, like, what we're thinking. Yeah. Not necessarily, like, oh, you know, we're signing this third D tackle to, like, the practice squad. Not stuff like that. But in the offseason, he was kept in the loop on, as far as what they were thinking at offensive coordinator, at play
money
calling.
On this guy.
At,
you're not playing.
Yeah, like, and, you know, he is the one writing
stuff.
The check. So, he has filled in on stuff like that. And that's why I think it's very interesting that, and, you know, so the tight ends coach, Nick Caley. Way back when we were talking about who should call plays, that was my guy. I said, Nick Caley he's a tight ends coach. Having to coach tight ends, you need to know a lot more about different offensive positions, and they tend to learn a lot about schemes. He's a John Carroll guy.
Of course.
He's cut from the same cloth as a McDaniels, as a Nick Caserio, and he was blocked from interviewing from
Elliot
the Raiders.
Wolf.
So clearly, Elliot Wolf. So clearly, Belichick does not want Nick Caley leaving the Patriots system.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, he also doesn't want Nick Caley as his offensive coordinator yet. So in those offseason meetings, when they're going through the thing and he's telling Kraft, like, oh, you know, we're bringing back Patricia and Judge, like, we're keeping Nick here no matter what. You know, I don't think he's ready to call plays yet. So, and we already have Kraft sort of like, and we'll see Sunday if Kendrick Bourne has a little uptick, because maybe it's not an edict, but maybe Belichick and especially Patricia sees that and is like, all right, we got to play the guy more. If we get to November, mid-November, and the Patriots are 2-9 or 2-7, whatever the math would be for how many weeks away that is, and the offense still can't run a play, is Kraft going to slightly maybe suggest, not an edict, like, hey, you blocked this kid from interviewing. You know, there's a history of tight ends coaches around the league. He's seeing Arthur Smith as a head coach now who, like, maybe will actually, like, use play action, unlike Matt Patricia, who will maybe actually, like, motion their receivers. Just, you know, we're 2-9. We're going to have the 8th overall pick, and you're going to draft a tackle anyway. So just have him call plays. Have him call plays. He knows the system, and then you go into next year hitting the ground running.
At least have him shadow the guy that's calling plays and not have, you know, Billy Yates around for one half and then send him up to the booth, or having Joe Judge and Brian Hoyer and Mac Jones powwow. Have Nick Cayley be in on the process as well. Tyler, you had a point.
I totally forgot about it, because now we're talking about firing the offensive coordinator, which, by the way, they're not going to Nick Cayley in season. That'd be an offseason move.
They could switch play caller because he's not the offensive coordinator. Doesn't have the title. It's not as big of a deal.
I would bet you any sort of money there's zero chance he would ever be considered an in-season play caller plan B. That's going to Bill Belichick.
I don't think Bill Belichick would consider that. I think the guy who's writing the checks would consider that.
My theory is that the reason there's no OC is obviously potentially related to a budget reason, whatever. I think that's kind of a boring explanation. I think the more sexier explanation is that if you don't name an OC, you allow an easier firing, a softer landing for a guy who's, you know, almost set up to fail, as Matt Patricia is. I don't know if he's set up to fail, but you know he's going to fail because
he sucks. Could also just move him to different responsibilities and have less of an explanation,
like,
as well.
Becoming a full-time offensive line coach. He should be doing that.
So you don't
fire him as offensive coordinator. He remains in the exact same role he's doing now with no real official adjustments.
But part of my
Belichick takes
like over. Part of my scare with Nick Cayley, and you mentioned Justin Herbert being overrated. And this does tie in, believe it or not. Justin Herbert, I also have reservations last year about the Chargers. I said they wouldn't make the playoffs. This year, I think they will, because they're just too good not to. They have a dumbass of an offensive coordinator,
Joe Lombardi.
And do you know where their GM went to college?
Is it Tom Telesco still?
Tom Telesco. You know whose college roommate was? And you know where he went to college?
I'm going to say he was, fill me in.
John Carroll, and his college roommate was Josh McDaniels. Do you think Nick Cayley won't be on their short? If their offense sputters again down the stretch and they do the thing again where they just don't let Justin Herbert throw deep for the last 2 months of the season and that dude gets fired finally, you don't think Nick Cayley's going to be on their short list?
He will be. There's such a nepotism problem in the NFL.
You have to up his responsibility before this offseason hits, or else he's going to see that and be like, why would I stay here with Mac Jones and a bad offensive line when I can go coach Justin Herbert with Rashawn Slater and Zion Johnson and all these receivers, and with a guy who went to the same college as me as the GM?
So us three here seems like we have no faith going into Sunday about this being a sexy game. The Patriots offense breaking out.
Getting back to the main idea, are we going to see Kendrick Bourne play more than two snaps on Sunday?
Yes, and this cut we're going to play right now from Friday yesterday confirms to me this was disciplinary, and that Bill Belichick probably not getting his way, Matt Patricia probably not getting his way. The two guys that are Kendrick Bourne and Robert Kraft. Here's Bourne yesterday with the media.
Kendrick, any indication, you know, this week, maybe a little bit more action for you?
I've been practicing, been in that role, so rotating, you know, just waiting to go in. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're getting closer to giving the coaches what they're looking for?
Yeah, feeling better.
That role in practice, is it similar to what you were in last week in practice?
Yeah, kind of the same thing, you know, just rotate going in when they call me in and just playing the plays that I'll get in.
How'd you feel about your practice this week?
Feel better. Feel a lot better. Healthy, just moving well, and just want to do everything right that I'm supposed to do.
So he expects to play more, but yet his role in practice hasn't changed since the previous week. Doesn't that confirm to you that it was disciplinary?
I get an ice cream headache listening to this and trying to formulate, like, what was the conversation with Kendrick Bourne?
I don't think there was one. Matt Patricia
and Bill Belichick that led to last Sunday, that's been going on all of this week in practice. Like, You need him out there. I'm sorry, but you it makes no sense why he's not playing. This team is not good enough for Bill Belichick to pull like the Wes Welker routine and go, no, we're going to punish you because I don't like what you're doing and you're going to learn the hard way, young man. This is what happens. And you're not that good.
Hey, Pete, they said I got to come off the bench.
It's ridiculous that you're not putting him out there, that you're actively making Mac Jones' life more difficult than it needs to be. He has to be out there. You don't have Ty Montgomery. Your other skill positions, I mean, are shaky at times.
But do you want some good news?
Yes.
We are, I think we are 17, 18 days away from the Celtics preseason opener.
Oh, Bruins preseason opener next Saturday against the Flyers.
Yeah.
Prospects Challenge last night.
And the season opener is what, October 15th? So it's less than a month away?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, when this team starts 0-4, boy, I can't wait. We're going to be in here and frigid cold. The sun won't be up. My car windshield will
be
frosted.
We'll be watching Bruins hockey, though, man.
You know what's a shame, though?
Talking about the first line and, oh,
You see last
Taylor
night?
Hall,
you see what happened? You see what happened at the Prospects Challenge last night, Ryan?
The Prospect
Bruins
Challenge,
went
John.
Down 3-1. Mark McLaughlin hits our guy Fabian Lysell on a shorty. Absolutely rips a nip. Big comeback.
Mark
Johnny
McLaughlin.
Beecher with the game-winning goal.
Wait, he ripped a nip?
Yeah.
Like nip. He like opened up a nip like on the eye. Like, I've never heard that phrase before.
He sniped.
I've never heard ripped a nip.
Top cheddar.
Have you ever heard that?
What is
ripped a nip?
I don't know.
Went bar south.
Why isn't Kendrick?
Nick Lapin, you're from here.
Hit that good Gouda in the top shelf.
Rips
where Mama
I don't
cookies.
Understand why Kendrick Bourne didn't play.
Is if you rip play? A nip, that means like I
don't
just
know
like,
why Malcolm Butler didn't
totally
play.
Slammed
oh,
that
God,
nip.
Really
of like,
what if the Patriots didn't trade Jimmy G to the Niners?
Oh, I need the Patriots to win tomorrow.
Did you know Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard?
I'm looking at the future.
First, Hogan played lacrosse.
All right, let's take a break here in the Bruce.
Ryan Tannehill was a receiver.
Now we're right back to it. The WEEI Producers Show on WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
Back on the WEEI Producers Show, Ryan Garvin, John Anderson, Tyler Devitt. The 1 hour we are allowed to talk on the air to keep hope that we actually have a future here at the station. The WEEI Producers Show is brought to you by the cleanup and restoration specialist at ServPro. Call 1-800-SERV. Is not true?
I've been asking
for more time on the station for us for a long time. We're never going to get it.
No, we have to share this.
I was 5 minutes late once in 5 years working here, though, Tyler.
So yep, tanked us.
This hour of the show is brought to you by the cleanup and restoration specialist at ServPro. Call 1-800-SERV-PRO. I don't know where your guys' confidence is in the Patriots. It can't be overwhelmingly confident, but you could still obviously make a case that they're going to win. The overwhelming confidence we're hearing from Pittsburgh might be a little bit unsettling if you're a Patriots fan. I'm not really sure why you have Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback, but Ryan Clark on GetUp was talking about the confidence he has. He obviously played for the Steelers against Brady in all those years, but now, this year's matchup, he's really confident going into this one.
I'm feeling so good right now about these Pittsburgh Steelers versus the New England Patriots. It's a feeling I never had when I was in Pittsburgh because they always had Tom Brady. Guess what? They ain't got it no more. And go figure this, right? The guy coaching for the Patriots now kind of looked like the guy that got fired from Cleveland back in the day, and I'm happy about it. I am absolutely ecstatic.
So Ryan Clark's never been more confident. Here's Sal Palantoni of pretty much the same message, 93.7 in Pittsburgh on the afternoon show with Andrew Filippone, saying the Steelers are a home underdog. How does that happen?
I think it's an insult to the Steelers organization that the Patriots would be two-point favorites in the home opener after the Patriots lost and the Steelers won in the fashion in which they did win. I mean, sure, there's question marks about the Steelers team, but betting against a Mike Tomlin coach team in its home opener, a 1-0 team, I just don't get it. I really don't.
Now, I'm not putting my dollars in this game, but I would put them if I had any on the Steelers money line. I think
we
the Steelers
were listening to the Patriots radio broadcast.
The Patriots
for
don't
the
majority
do that. Of the first half.
Patriots never cheat. I think the Steelers win 24-20. I think it's kind of a higher scoring game, not as ugly as everyone thinks it is. The Steelers can actually move the ball decently. They're not this anemic offense like the Jaguars were 4 years ago with Chad Henne. Like, this is not a miserable offense. It's not great. It's not even good or league average.
I do think Trubisky is somebody that Belichick could probably F with, and they don't have a great offensive line.
He would love
line. That's part of the whole thing. They didn't have a good O-line last year. they made some changes, but they didn't really like drastically improve it that much. And supposedly that's part of the reason why they're not just playing Kenny Pickett, is because they don't want him to get killed right off the bat. But like, you like, so you have you know, Patriots defense looks like it might be pretty good this year. I think they should be able to mess with Trubisky a little bit, although it is worth noting last time the Patriots played Trubisky was in 2018, and he scrambled all over them during that. And I feel like that's always been the thing with the Patriots.
Oh, yeah,
the Patriots defense
so
too, is that like
quarterbacks
who can scramble. It's been maddening over these years. And then, you know, third and longs against Ryan Fitzpatrick's Bills and scrambling quarterbacks are something that the Patriots defense has never really been able to handle. But, you know, you flip to the other side, no TJ Watt for the Steelers, obviously. And I forget who put this out there. I'm sure they're listening intently right now, and I'm sorry that I'm getting your name wrong and not remembering it was you. When TJ Watt misses games, they up the blitz percentage on defense there in Pittsburgh. And they got a couple dogs there. Obviously, Cam Hayward, Alex Highsmith is a young guy. I think he's a third-year player, and he's really come along as well. So I kind of feel like both offenses are going to be messed with. I disagree, Tyler. I think it's going to be a lower-scoring game. I'm thinking like a... like a 13-10, maybe even like a 16 to like, you know, like just trading field goals if you even get close enough.
I think if a Patriots, so what does a Patriots win looks like? I think a Patriots win looks like you're going to hear a lot of Christian Barmore, you're going to hear a lot of Devon Godchow. It's going to be the line beating up on what we have been told is a suspect O-line for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And maybe you get to see a little more man-to-man in the secondary, if I can really football Jones you to death here for a second and actually make their skill position players work. Although apparently Chase Claypool is the next coming to Rob Gronkowski, so I'm going to be very interested to see
the what X, lucky, the Z, vertical routes.
What lucky duck gets that assignment. But I don't think that is actually going to come to fruition. I think that the Steelers defense, and this is something Christian brought up constantly this week, that the reason Pittsburgh looks so good against the Bengals is that they play them twice a year. And I just do not buy that.
That seems too simple. That's too simple.
Because if that's the case, then why do the Patriots historically always suck against the Dolphins in Miami? If they play them, they're there every year. They should know what to expect, right?
And so the inverse is, why are the Jets so bad against the Patriots? Because they play twice a year? No, the Jets just stink every year. They stink every year.
I think that point is crap. I think the Steelers defense, I thought, was really, really good against the AFC representatives in the Super Bowl and Joe Burr. And I am looking for them to do the same. I think Minka Fitzpatrick has a big game. I have a score probably around what we saw what the Dolphins game last week, 17-7.
He's two gapping, and you're getting the beneficiary.
Shut up, Planet Mega Football Punt, damn it!
3-4, they're moving him outside.
Oh, it's like things have never changed. But I see... it's going to be Steelers defense probably putting up just as many points on the board as Steelers offense. And I think that once again... they're going to make it difficult on Mac, and we're going to be sitting going, man, Trent Brown, you're going to have another fake injury maybe, or, you know, Isaiah Wynn, maybe we think about flipping you guys. And I think that the suspect Patriots line is going to get Mac killed. So, yeah, I have the Steelers taking this one. I have, look, just put it out there, 0-4. Guys,
0-4 seems likely.
I think
likely,
they're going to start 0-4, and it's not like I'm rooting for the demise of the Patriots, but I sat here back in May and said, I don't think this team is very good, and it's going to be a slog of a year. And if we get through it, we'll have a nice high draft pick and money for the next year. But until then, oh boy, it's going to be rough watching this team.
Isn't this like really the only winnable game in the next three? I know you have your home opener next week against Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. I mean,
they always play the Ravens well.
Yeah,
though.
I was
they
gonna
beat
say.
They beat the they
who,
beat
who is they.
The Patriots.
Are these the Patriots of old?
Well, 2 years
Bill
ago
Belichick
in 2019.
There,
yeah, there's some similar players on the team. They're better now than they were in 2019, and they always scheme it up well against the Ravens.
This year's Patriots defense is better than 19's defense?
Or, sorry, 20's defense.
I mean, wasn't that Boogeyman 2.0?
Sure, they were all
that
washed.
That game was also in a monsoon. And
no,
Mark
that was
Jackson
no, that was the Cowboys game.
No, nope, Lamar Jackson at the end of the game, he was playing in a monsoon.
Okay, but they still... So what happened at the beginning of the game, in the middle of the game?
Well, it was raining.
Not the entire time.
I don't know. I just can't use
the
Patriots.
And even if it was raining, I don't care. It's rain. They're professional football players. They play in the rain
the
before.
Point, look,
you schemed them up well. You beat them.
I understand what he's saying, Tyler. I think the point is that, you know, even with the Cam Newton Patriots, they were able to beat John Harbaugh. But no, I agree with what you're saying, is that this is probably the most winnable game on the slate. I don't think it's an insult, Sal Pal, that they're 2.5-point underdogs at home, because no. They have, as Mike Tomlin said, we are also a team in transition, and we will have to work as hard to get every blade of grass, and it's going to be two trains off the track.
That's where
they are. The Steelers are in a very similar position. The only difference is I don't know if their guy coming up is as good as your guy coming up. I feel a lot better about Mac Jones.
And yes, they are better than the 2019 defense, too. The 2019 Patriots defense is like one of the most overrated defenses of the last decade.
Are we done?
They went 9-0 playing against Sam Darnold.
This defense doesn't have J.C. Jackson, a Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, J.C. Jackson also vastly overrated. He's like AFC Trayvon Diggs.
You're not basing it off the Thursday game, are you?
No, I'm basing it off of how people were never afraid to go at him.
I mean, he got burned on that Thursday night game because he wasn't playing in press man, and he gave up like a bomb.
I don't care about that game. I'm talking about with the Patriots.
And he's better than everyone here. He's better than Jalen Mills.
Yeah, that one guy is, but that whole
Stephon Gilmore is better.
That whole front seven boogeyman. Do you remember the quarterbacks that they played that season in 2019?
The roster was so much better defensively. Younger Dante Hightower, younger Devin McCourty.
The offenses that they were playing could not run plays.
Thank you, Nick LaPan. Thank you.
And our time is up. Our 1 hour allotment of time is up.
I'm Tyler Devin.
And that is the WEI producer show. If you're just now joining us in your car, hit the Odyssey app or the on demand section of WEI.com. We are here every Saturday, 8 to 9 a.m.
Seconds of the show, though.
Ken and Curtis are next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.